Welcome to Out to Lunch, the podcast which does what the title says. We get a fabulous person and take them out to lunch to a fabulous restaurant. We order all the food and all the good wine. And then in that environment, people talk in a way they don't normally talk. In this episode, we have an actor you will have seen in Ray Donovan, in the Mike Leigh films Happy Go Lucky and Vera Drake, more recently in Deadpool, and frankly, anything that needs a brilliant actor. It is Eddie Marsan.
And suddenly I'm standing there and they literally put a bazooka on my shoulder and said, there's Will Smith.
So Eddie Marsan has no dietary requirements whatsoever. In other words, he said he'll eat anything, which meant that I get to indulge myself and bring him to what is one of my favourite restaurants, which is the fish and seafood restaurant Bentley's. It's been on its present site for over 100 years, since 1916. But for about the last 10 or more years, it's been owned by the chef Richard Corrigan, who really has turned it into one of the best places for fish and seafood in London. Small disclosure, this is one of those places I come to and spend my own money. Shocking, isn't it? I go and sit at the bar and I order oysters and I'm very happy. It's a terrific restaurant. Today, we are going to be in a basement room because it's better for recording, but we get all the brilliant Bentley's seafood. I am seriously looking forward to this. Come on in. Hello, Eddie. Welcome to your table. Thank you for agreeing to do this.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for asking.
You are incredibly busy. It's what everybody always says about you, isn't it?
I run around a lot.
So to find a moment to actually get to have lunch with you feels like a privilege. When you're shooting Ray Donovan, the big series you've been doing for, what, six?
Seven years.
7 years. Is it true you fly home every weekend to be with the family?
Yeah.
And you do a roast dinner on Sundays?
Yeah.
Right, so here's the really important question. What's the key thing to roasting beef?
I use this method where I turn up the oven really hot.
As hot as it will get?
As hot as it can get for 5 minutes a pound.
Okay.
And then I turn the oven off and then I leave it in there for 2 hours and don't touch it.
Oh, this is intriguing.
And then I get it out and it's always perfect.
Do you prefer to roast on the bone or off the bone?
Everything in, everything in.
Right, 5 minutes per pound. So if you've got a kind of 2 kilo piece, you're essentially roasting it at top heat for 20 minutes and then you turn the heat off.
Turn everything off, but don't open the oven door for 2 hours. Don't touch the oven.
I've never heard this method before.
Yeah, it really works.
And what does it bring it out at? Medium rare or just
medium
rare?
Medium rare. Medium rare. It's beautiful.
Is it?
Yeah, it's lovely.
Where did you get this from?
A friend of mine, it's a mother's recipe. She told me about it. When I first thought about it, I thought, that's crazy. And also, when you do it, the fire alarms go up because, you're burning it for 20 minutes. But then it works. We tried it once, and it worked. And in any oven. It's amazing.
Well, that's brilliant. I think we're done, really. I think I've gathered some information that I never had before because I've been sitting there with probes and thermometers and...
Yeah, all that stuff. I don't do any of that now. I used to do all that, but now I don't. And it's really nice.
So is this place, is seafood a big thing? You spend a lot of your time in LA, don't you?
Yeah, well, seafood was a big thing in the East End. We ate a lot of seafood in Bethnal Green because we're near the docks, so it was always a big thing for us.
And is oysters a thing for you? You do oysters or do you not do
oysters? Yeah, no, I could do oysters. I quite like oysters.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good, because there's quite a lot of oysters on this menu. Although you've moved quite, geographically. You grew up in Bethnal Green.
Yeah.
And now you're in West London.
Chiswick, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You haven't got an Aga as well, have you?
No, we haven't got an Aga. And I haven't got four ovens. I've got two. I've got two ovens.
Two ovens is real. I've got two ovens. I think two ovens is right, isn't it?
Well, I have to have two ovens because of the way I cook the beef. I have to keep that in.
Because there's got to be something else going on in the other oven.
Yeah, my potatoes.
Do you want to have a look at the menu?
Yes, thank you.
What can I tell you? It's all good. We can ask them to do us a set of oysters.
Yes. Yeah, that's good.
So, this is Yuna, who will be serving us today.
Thank you, very nice to meet you.
We thought some oysters to kick off.
Of course. How many oysters would you like?
How much do you like oysters?
Well, I go a lot. I quite like them, actually.
But do you? If we did a dozen between us?
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be fun.
Shall I make just a mix so you can try them up, all of them?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Brilliant. And if you've got that bit of the order in, and then we'll look at the rest.
Yes.
Yeah, I come back then as soon as you're ready. Okay. Anything to drink for you for the time being?
Can I get a sparkling water, please?
Just a sparkling water.
That would make me very happy.
Actually, can I get Diet Coke as well?
Diet Coke, drink.
Do you generally not drink?
I do, but not that much. I'm not a big drinker. I'm not very good with it. I always get a bit nauseous if I drink too much.
For people who don't know, in Ray Donovan, you play his brother Terry,
yeah,
who is an ex-boxer who has acquired, perhaps acquired or developed Parkinson's.
Yes, yeah.
And you've been doing it for a significant time. Yeah. I'm really, it's an amazing performance. It really is.
Thank you.
But I'm intrigued, over that length of time, have you had to work on the symptoms developing?
Yes, yeah, and treatments as well. We worked on the symptoms developing, and also the side effects of the medication, nightmares, visions, which Parkinson's sufferers have. Certain medications affect the ability to temper your impulses. There was also something that they wanted to try for a couple of years when my character had deep brain stimulation, new treatment where you go into the brain and you, if you imagine the brain, the classic idea of the brain is like a tree, it's like branches. There's certain fibres that wrap around the connections in the brain that stop the thought process coming. So if you ask somebody with Parkinson's to hold their hand straight, if you hold your hand straight, you're not actually doing nothing. What you're doing is you're adjusting your hand constantly. And what a Parkinson's sufferer will have is that they'll lose the ability to make that constant readjustment. So what they do is the hand shakes. And what deep brain stimulation is, it finds the part of the brain which is malfunctioning and it shuts it down with an electric impulse. With Terry, it's a really interesting tool for the character. It's a really interesting function to be playing somebody who is... Terry's in a terrible moral dilemma within the show. And that kind of shake... best way to describe Terry is he's always morally between a rock and a hard place. So he's always doing this.
You're actually doing it on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
And it's quite disconcerting to be around someone who has got a Parkinsonian shake.
It is, yeah.
Is there a challenge to not let the symptom become the character?
You have to make the symptom an expression of the character. It's actually, in dramatic terms, it is a very, very useful function for expressing what's going on in the character psychologically.
Do you want to get a starter?
Yeah, okay, what should we have?
Oh, no, there's oysters, then there's a starter. We're going to keep you in place for a couple of hours, mate.
We got some new dishes if you like to try. We got some octopus a la Greek if you like. So you got just a bit of octopus, you got a bit of salad, you got...
Oh, that sounds nice. Is that for a starter?
A bit of bread, broad beans, yeah, of course.
Yeah, that'd be lovely, thank you.
And I'll start with the crispy squid.
And can I get the grilled sea bass?
Yeah. Anything to go with, sir? Any salad, potatoes maybe?
Potatoes.
New potatoes, mash, chips maybe?
Chips would be nice. Thank you.
And I'll have the monkfish prawn and goat curry.
Monkfish curry. You got some rice in there, sir.
Can I get a green lettuce heart and Parmesan salad?
Thank you very much. It's very kind.
You grew up in Bethnal Green.
Yeah.
In the 70s.
Yeah, and 80s.
Early 80s.
Yeah. Well, I lived in Bethnal Green. I grew up, I was born in Mile End and we moved to Bethnal Green when I was 4 and I left when I was 28.
So it's a serious part of your life?
Yeah, big part of my life. Still is.
You're very clear and you talked a lot about sort of your working class background and working class culture. For the point when you were growing up, you've said that your dad pretty much said leave school at 15.
Yeah.
When you were growing up, what was your expectation? Because whatever your expectation was, you were a hell of a long way from it.
I didn't really have much of an expectation. It was, I remember a friend of my father's was in the print, and the print was a really good business for a young man to get into.
So you mean the printing business?
The printing business. So they said, become a printer. So I left school at 15, and then I went to the London College of Printing and did a course there for about a year, and then got a job as an apprentice printer somewhere. In a merchant bank, actually.
That's actually a sign of the times, because now the London College of Printing is essentially a journalism college.
Right.
The idea of somebody actually being sent there to learn how to be a printman is hilarious.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's what you did.
In the early 80s.
Early 80s. Yeah. So you were still... Were you still 16. Being taught to knock 16. Hot metal?
Yeah. The computers were in the corner. You weren't allowed to touch them because the union weren't letting anybody go near the computers. It was before the unions got smashed.
Well, indeed. It's a major part of, I'm a newspaper man.
Yeah.
Back, and I came in right on the cusp of that point. There's something sort of very nostalgic about you being taught to bang hot metal into the frame and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
The story is that it was the guy who was employing you who saw something in you and took you under his wing.
He did. It's actually quite Dickensian, really. When I was
what was his name?
Mr. Bennett. His name was Leslie Bennett, and he used to run a book at the Walthamstow Dog Track under the name Joe Bennett.
Did he do all the arms and
stuff? Yeah, did all that and he was very, very good at it. His father used to run a he was a bookmaker in the 20s. But he used to run him and his brother set up a chain of menswear shops in the East End through the 60s and 70s. And when I was on my 16th birthday, he had a shop in Bethnal Green, and I walked in and I asked him if I could have a job. And he took me under his wing, and he basically changed my life. I mean, there's lots of... He was one of the biggest influences on me, really, because he was an East End grammar school boy, and he was morally a very good man. When I first went in to work with him, lots of people in the East End said to me, "You're working in Bennett's, can you nick us a shirt?" Basically, that's what they said. And I walked in with him, and the first thing he said to me was, if you steal anything, someone somewhere always pays. And that was a really massive lesson for me. I remember thinking he was such a good moral man. It was very interesting because he was a One Nation Tory and I'm not a Tory. But to be around him and realise just how good he was.
Right? The oysters have just arrived.
Our famous oysters, so we got some Jersey, you got some Carlingford, and you got some Dorset. We do suggest a bit of drop of lemon and a bit of black pepper.
Thank you.
But you can choose if you like some Tabasco and vinegar.
Marvellous.
Thank you.
Enjoy.
Thank you. One of the things I should say for the record is we're recording in a month without an R in it, and so all of these are rocks rather than any natives.
Right.
Because you're not meant to have the natives in a month without an R.
Right.
When did you go onto Twitter? Because you're very present. 2000,
yeah, I've kind of tempered it a bit now.
You have?
Yeah.
I've noticed.
Yeah. Paddy Constantine got me onto it when I was after we finished. I think it was about 2011, 2012. It was when I went to do Ray Donovan.
Right.
I went to do Ray Donovan, and he said, "Get on this, and we'll communicate via this, and we'll send each other messages." And the first thing that happened was I went there, and then there was an EDL march,
English Defence League.
Yeah, and Tommy Robinson talked about representing the white working class, and I just sent out a tweet saying,
"You don't have
the intelligence to represent me." And that was the first thing where people suddenly thought, "Hold on, you're an actor. You're not supposed to be saying things like that."
That's the interesting thing, because you have been extremely vociferous in what's the word? Refusing to allow people to define what being working class means, what that background means, and what that politics means.
Yes, yeah, and also not to have a patronising definition of it or a romantic definition of it. One of the things I've realised is that people think that money and wealth is an indication of character, and it isn't. And also, I have a really healthy distrust of anybody who is an ideologue or a populist, and anybody who thinks in a binary way. That's one of the reasons why I don't like Corbyn, because I think he's very binary.
Corbyn, leader of the Labour Party.
He takes half the truth of something and runs with it. And ideologues will always do that. That's why they always end up being exposed, and they always end up lying, and they always end up trying to cover their tracks.
Let's really piss off some people by you starting to eat some oysters in a fancy way while explaining why you hate Corbyn. But we don't care.
But not only that, it's also, that's why I don't like Brexit either, and why I don't like the Brexit Party or UKIP, because I think it's taking half the truth and running with it. That's what populism does.
There was a fascinating moment, not sure if it was last year or the year before, very specific thing where you referenced pub culture and fear among many of your friends about dads coming home pissed and who was going to get a slap.
Yeah, yeah.
And people went fucking berserk, didn't they?
They did, yeah. It was very interesting because...
What was the context? Why did you tweet that? I can't remember what the...
I was talking... It was a dinner party, actually. I think it was with Jason Isaacs and a few actor friends of mine. And somebody said about how they weren't going to vote Labour anymore. And I just said, I was at this dinner party and people were talking about their Labour supporters and they're beginning to pull away. So basically, all these Corbyn supporters, and a lot of them who aren't working class but have this romantic view of the working class, suddenly started to say, "Oh, you go to dinner parties now, do you?" And I just said, "Look, I don't like pubs. As honestly, I don't like pubs. I've never really liked pubs because, to me, they always represented an aspect of fear where I grew up. Because you never knew how the old man was going to come home. You never knew what state was going to be in. Sunday lunchtime when the pubs closed, it was always like, what's dad going to be like when he gets home?" And they suddenly said that I was making a generalization about the working class, and that how could I say that now I go to dinner parties and because I prefer to have dinner at home or go to a restaurant with friends. And what shocked me was people like Owen Jones and a lot of other prominent Corbyn supporters were saying that I was making a comment on the working class. And I was thinking, hold on a minute, what makes you think that I don't have working class people at dinner parties? What makes you think that working class people don't go to restaurants? That's, you're exposing yourself and your preconceived idea about my culture, not me.
The other thing that really struck me was you were well up for it.
Yeah.
You were up for a fight.
Ray Winston always said about me, I can have it on the cobbles. That's what he says. You love
have it on the cobbles?
Yeah, you love it on the cobbles. Then you
was that Deptford talking to Deptford talking to Bethnal Green? You talked about your dad. I think I got the impression, is he still with us?
He is still with us. When I was younger, my parents had a very difficult divorce. So I had a long time where I had a difficult relationship. I have a good relationship with him now. He's a very good grandfather. But when I was growing up, we kind of were at odds with each other for quite some time. Yeah. And Mr. Bennett kind of stepped in and became my father figure.
Famously, the story is that you were dancing, you were an expert dancing in a film, Empire State. Empire State was about what was going on in the East End at that time?
I don't know. I've never seen it. I was going to go and see it. Me and my mates were going to go and see it, and they burnt down the ABC at Mile End.
The night do you think they burned it down because everybody in Bethnal Green had been in it as extras?
Yeah. I think so. I think there was, the people who couldn't be extras burnt it down.
out of fury. But I haven't seen it either. So we can probably look it up on IMDb and work out what it was about. But the key thing was you were part of a big dance club scene.
Me and my mates used to dance a lot, a hell of a lot.
And we're talking Northern Soul, Rare Groove,
and
all
Soul,
that.
Yeah, modern jazz as well. I love to dance. I still love to dance now, actually. One of the things about Ray Donovan, I think one of the reasons why they took away the shakes was because on set they realised that physically I'm quite coordinated, and they wanted to explore that. They wanted to explore that within the boxing and within, you know.
And now all of a sudden I desperately want to see you on Strictly. But you like the clobber?
I love clothes. Even now, I love clothes. And I never play characters who like clothes. I always play characters who have terrible dress sense. I'm
trying to think here. Didn't you have a pretty good outfit in, if I get this wrong, I'm trying to think in Mr. Norris?
Because
you've done a lot of Victorian wearing great tipfers, great hats, great trilbies.
Yeah, when we did Little Dorrit, they gave me a great hat in Little Dorrit, yeah.
So you're dancing on the floor as an extra.
Yeah. And I see Jamie Foreman, who's an actor now, is a friend of mine. He did a scene. It was a great scene. He walked across the dance floor, and he was brilliant. And I remember watching it, though, and something in my mind said, I can do that. I could do that. And it just clicked. And I thought, that's what I want to do. And I went back to see Mr. Bennett, and I said, I think I want to be an actor. And he said, well, if you get into a drama school, I'll pay your fees. And he did. Well, him and my mum got together and they raised the money for the first year. And then my drama school gave me a scholarship for the second year because they knew I was struggling for money and I'd have to leave if they didn't give me a scholarship.
Brackets, they also recognised you were rather good.
I think so. I don't know. They were very, very conscientious people. They wanted to help.
Hello, it's Ollie here. I'm the executive producer on Out to Lunch. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, one of the relationships I'm proudest of in my life is with my daughters. They're not quite the age to go for fancy lunches with celebs yet, but we do enjoy our family dinners together in relative harmony. You know, give us time, that they are still quite young. But this takes work, and it's a mistake to think that relationships have to be easy to be right. The best relationships come out of learning to live with each other and keeping our sense of humour, even when food is spilt all over the table or dinner's not to everyone's liking. It can be really tricky, but therapy can help you with those skills. You can work through parenting challenges, explore seeing eye to eye as a couple, and work through your relationship with yourself too. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's flexible, and you can switch therapists at any time, as that's a relationship that needs to be the right fit too. Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit betterhelp.com/outtolunch today and get 10% off your first month.
Hello, it's me, Jamie Lang, and I've got a new podcast, and this time there are no gimmicks. It's just great company. Because the thing is, I realize the reason I love podcasts so much is because they're a great way to connect with people.
Hello, I'm Youngblood.
Joe Brand.
I'm Paloma Faith.
Jay Blades.
Elizabeth Day.
Zara Larson. Casper
Lee. And I'm Great Company.
Great Company.
Great Company.
Great Company.
Apparently.
It's Great Company with me, Jamie Lang. Coming Wednesday, the 27th of March.
Should we let start to bring the starters? Yes. I'm well ahead of you because you're talking and I'm just eating. You can leave them.
Thank you very much.
Welcome. So got your octopus, a bit of broad beans, a bit of olives, tomato, a bit of red onion.
That's very pretty.
And you do have your crispy squid, a bit of lime aioli. Anything else for you to drink for the time being?
Can I get another Diet Coke?
Of course. Straight away. For you, sir, anything?
I'm fine, thank you. Okay. If you want to throw your fork into a bit of crispy squid, feel free.
Oh, thank you. The first film I got offered was Gangster Number One, and there was all these gangster movies being made, and they were the trend, and a lot of very good East End actors kind of thought that they were going to be film stars because they were now making films about London life. And
There is a particular East End Jewish...
Yeah.
...speech pattern.
There is, and it's very, very... And it's more articulate.
Sid James had it.
Yeah.
He was a classic, even though he was actually South African.
Yeah, but. Yeah. And it's more articulate... You can always... When I listen to an East End Jew, I listen to them, I can hear it. I can hear it. And there's more articulacy. There's a more muscularity to it. Much more muscular. Maybe it's because of the Yiddish words that we used at home. Although we used...
Did you?
We used Yiddish words. My dad used to be a lorry driver. And he used to yostle me up every morning. I basically used to be asleep, and my mum said, "You got to take him to. I'm not having him in the house. Take him out. Take him out. Now you take him in the lorry with you." I used to be asleep, and he said, "Oh, yostle, come and get up." And I was yostle to my dad. I was yostle all the time.
Do you ever talk about there being a broigus in the house? Was that one of the words or not?
No.
Do you know the word broigus?
No.
You keep getting into bloody broiguses on Twitter all the time. A broigus, it's onomatopoeic, isn't it?
But the language is amazing. And the thing is, I play lots of Jews all the time.
Well, do you know, I've often looked at you and thought, is he? No, he's not.
I'm not.
Take a couple more oysters before they take them away and move us on. Actually, just take the oysters off and then you can take the thing away. Do you ever use schmuck?
Now,
here's the thing. One of the great distinctions between New York and London. So in New York, it's schmuck. In London, it's schmock. If you're definitely an East End, old East End Jew, though most people don't actually know what the word means.
I'd always hear people say, "Oh, who's that bloke? Oh, he's a schmuck at a firm," which means he's the idiot. Yeah.
So basically, schmuck or schmock means penis.
Right.
You're calling someone a cock. And the one other additional bit, which is brilliant, is have you heard the word putz? So someone says he's a total putz, and the definition, according to, I've heard it from Leo Rosten, who wrote the big book on Yiddish, is a putz is the same as a schmuck, only smaller and less useful.
Thank you.
It's actually one of the things I've always thought is hilarious, the whole idea of a Jewish conspiracy. We're too bloody argumentative to organise. You know,
it doesn't make any sense.
One of the old gags has been two Jews in a room, three points of view. And
But it's like that with anyone, really. This idea of there was a friend of mine, Stuart Wood. He was in Gordon Brown's cabinet, and he's Lord Wood. He said this great thing. He quoted this German social democrat from the 19th century who called anti-Semitism false socialism. Because most other racists, when they're racist, they're hitting down. They feel superior to the person that they're attacking. But an anti-Semite is shooting up because they imagine there's this massive Jewish conspiracy and they're attacking it. That's why it's very seductive to people of the left, because it's quite often mistaken for egalitarianism. So, for instance, Corbyn will think that what he's doing is attacking the financial elite, but actually what he's doing is creating this idea of there being a Jewish conspiracy.
Yeah, Corbyn's whole, and the whole methodology of that area of the left is, where do I see the power? Who do I think has the power? Then I attack the power.
Exactly.
Where are you at?
I'm finished. Yeah, you could take it. Thank you.
Does it enjoy?
That's lovely, beautiful. Thank you. I'm just talking a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think our main courses are arriving. This has been, so far, three courses, because we did have an enormous
this is like of voices. I got married in Italy, and it was just like this. It was just non-stop.
Well, it just all kept coming.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So we got your main course. We got your monkfish curry, Saigon curry. You got the king prawns and the fillet of monkfish, a bit of yogurt.
It's very pretty.
They got your fillet of sea bass grilled.
That's very kind, thank you.
With the wild garlic and béarnaise sauce.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
A bit of lettuce with parmesan and anchovies. Chips as well. Anything else that I can get for you to drink?
Do you want another Diet Coke?
Yes, if yeah. I may.
Is that your vice?
Okay. Yeah, I do.
Diet Coke.
Caffeine. Coffee is to...
You left school at 15, essentially, I'm assuming, without many qualifications or any at all.
Yeah.
Although, of course, you now have a qualification for drama school.
I'm a doctor now.
Are you a doctor? Did you get a doctorate?
Yeah, they gave me a doctorate.
Who gave you the doctorate?
My drama school last year, they gave me a doctorate. I had to go and make a speech. And
did
I'm
you?
An honorary doctor, yeah.
Did he have gowns and
I
everything?
I did, and a hat. And
a hat. Must have been brilliant. But I think it may have been you quoting your wife who said that Twitter was almost your university debating society.
Yeah, she said that. She said, you love debating. You love... because acting has given me a love of language that I never had before. I was always a terrible malaprop. For years, I was a terrible malaprop because I had no academic...
Well, you really would use the wrong words for...
This is hilarious. I'm what you call a dextrocardiac. I have this thing called stenosis invertus, which means that all my visceral organs are reversed.
It's your heart on the wrong side.
My heart's on the wrong side, my liver, my kidneys.
So, hang on, I've never come across this. You are literally, all your organs are reversed?
All my organs are reversed.
Have any doctors who you haven't mentioned this to shove the stethoscope on the wrong side and go, fuck, he's dead?
Yeah, they have to do it. And when they do that thing where they check where you're hollow, I'm always hollow where I shouldn't be hollow. And yeah, it's very... But it's called a dextrocardiac. When I was a kid, I was a dextrocardiac. But I was always a terrible malaprop. So... When I went to printing college, the first day of college, they said, can you tell us something special about yourself? No, I'm a dextrocardiac. And I got up and said, I am an aphrodisiac.
were there any women in the room who looked at you?
And I said,
you're all right.
There's not many in the country, and I'm one of them. And then when I went home, and my mum said, how'd you get on the printing college, boy? I said, well, mum, I told them I'm an aphrodisiac. And she said, you silly bastard, you're a dextrocardiac. And I was always terrible with malaprops, always. And even now I struggle with words over three syllables, and I have to use them.
Because they're in scripts and they have to be said.
Yeah.
You said once, I thought it was quite amusing, this was an interview with Kermoden Mayer, that you were asked which was the role you hated most, and it came after the one that you actually loved most. So happy-go-lucky, you play the driving instructor, and then you said, and then in Hancock, the sort of weird...
Bank robber bloke, yeah.
It was just the same role, I just put on a different accent.
Yeah, I was terrible, awful. I blew it. I should have played a great... It was a big Hollywood movie, I was playing a big villain, but it wasn't a well-written part, it wasn't that well-written. And I was literally on Holloway Road doing Happy Go Lucky on a Thursday, and I got home from work and my agent said, they need you in LA on Sunday to shoot this movie. Someone's dropped out. And I said, all right. So I went over to LA and I literally stood there. I'd spent a year playing this, creating this character for Mike Lee in Happy Go Lucky. And suddenly I'm standing there and they literally put a bazooka on my shoulder and said, there's Will Smith. and I had to do it in America. So it's basically the same character.
So you went from, shouting at Sally Hawkins.
Yeah,
just shouting at break, Will. Break.
Yeah. And then he said, Enraha, as I blew him up. You know, yeah.
And now a word from our sponsor, which in this case is me. I've got a new book out. It's called My Last Supper, One Meal, A Lifetime in the Making, in which I attempt to answer the one question I've been asked most often, what would my last meal on earth be? I go out in search of the ingredients. It does include pig. And I tell the stories behind them. It's available now in hardback, ebook, and audio formats. And I'm also on tour with a live show based on the book. For tickets and info, visit jrayner.co.uk. And now back to Out to Lunch.
I work with John Voight, and he's just come out and said that Trump's the greatest president since Abraham Lincoln. And thank God I'm not on Twitter now, because the amount of people will be coming up to me and say, what are you going to say about it? Well, I tell you what my opinion about that is. I disagree with him 100%, but I think he's got a right to say what he wants to say.
How'd you get on with him on set? Is he all right?
I love him when he talks about acting. When he talks about acting and New York in the 60s and 70s and all these young actors who went on to become the greatest actors in the world, it's fascinating. And
John Voight was part of the Robert De Niro, Al Pacino crew, wasn't he?
Yeah. So we talk about politics sometimes as well, and we disagree. And I tease him and he teases me. But I like him. I just don't agree with him.
He's in an interesting position, actually, because to be a not just a Republican, but a Trump supporter in Hollywood is tricky.
Yeah, yeah. I was working with him when I was in L.A., and I was working with was shooting a funeral scene in a church. It was in July, and I said, I'm going to go now. We finished one. I said, see you later, John. See you Monday. And I got in a car, turned on the radio, and I had CNN on the radio, and suddenly I heard John's voice, and he said, hello, my name is John Voight. Let me tell you about my friend, Donald Trump. And he was narrating Trump's video at the Republican National Convention. And I was like, oh, I was just working with Sprone. And you just have, your mind has to kind of, that's one of the things, because I work with him and I've known him for 7 years. And apart from politics, I agree, he's a lovely bloke. So you can't, you know, and he's got a right to say, and if you disagree with him, you've got a right to disagree with him and tell him you disagree with him. But you can't stop people saying what they want to say, as long as they're not breaking the law.
Are you...
I'm great.
I'm great, thank you.
Leave
the chips.
Shall I leave them on the table?
Yeah. Go on.
Thank you.
Do you do dessert?
Yes, I do, actually. I'll do anything. I'm an actor. Pre-meal's a free meal.
So it's funny. This is, Richard Corrigan's restaurant is known for seafood, but their desserts are a thing. Japanese cheesecake, orange and apricot... Or soft meringue, white peach, raspberry and elderflower, which has my name on it. Warm orange cake with Sicilian citrus sorbet. Actually, this is quite difficult. Chocolate mousse, hazelnut, cherry, salted caramel cream. I know, creme brulee. Or strawberries.
What's a summer pudding like?
A summer pudding should be... it's bread on the outside filled with...
Berries.
Red berries. It's compacted down. It should look very pretty, and then you cut in.
I think I love a summer pudding.
And I will have the orange cake with the Sicilian citrus sorbet. I think I just want that because I like the words. Warm orange cake, Sicilian citrus.
Refreshing.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Shall I get after any coffee for you or anything else?
Can I get an espresso, if I may?
Single or double?
Double, please. Thank you.
Two of those. Two doubles. Thanks very much. What are you not very good at?
I've got brother-in-laws who can fix washing machines, and I'm not like that at all.
No, I'm rubbish at that.
My family always say the only thing you'll do, if you die, you can do eulogy. That's the only thing I can do. But on a film set, I'm good. That's what I know what I'm doing. I'm very good at it.
Ever done any musicals?
No, I'd love to do a musical. I've always wanted to do Guys and Dolls. I've always wanted to play Nathan Detroit.
Oh, for God's sake, this is now taped, it's recorded. I mean, this is an obvious thing, is it not? You can see quite clearly that...
Yeah.
And would you go back to the stage to do it if it was offered?
If they asked me to do Nathan Detroit...
All right, for fuck's sake, every producer in town, please listen to this. Anyone Sam would like to play Nathan Detroit in Guys and Dolls, and this is...
I'd love to. I think it'd be great.
Have you made advances to anyone? That is the kind of thing we have to be asked, isn't it?
Yeah, no one's ever asked me. No one's ever asked me. I get asked to do plays a lot. I get sent scripts all the time, and I can't do them. I'm not available to do them.
All right, well, I'm just putting on the record that I would love to see you do Nathan Detroit in Guys and Dolls. And there was never any kind of resistance to, oh, being an actor, that's not a...
My old man didn't understand it. He thought I was gay. He did. He thought I was gay.
That's the simplest explanation for all this wanting to dress up and put
Though he enjoys it now, you know, they enjoyed it when it became successful, but they didn't quite understand it. I remember once doing a play. I remember once playing Caligula in London.
Filthy bastard!
It was in the round, and at the end of Caligula, all the Roman soldiers are coming to kill him, and a director said. I want you to turn around, and the audience are going to be around, and I want you to turn around, and whoever you're facing in the audience, you've got to plead for your life, the speech. You've got to plead to them.
I can see where this is going.
And my dad was sitting in the front row. So I'm playing it, and all these soldiers are running around, and they're coming to kill me, and I turn around, there's my old man there, and I think, I've just got to do the speech.
Through.
So I'm doing the speech, and he literally went, fuck off.
Kind of like, don't make a scene.
Yeah.
So you got your summer pudding with a bit of American cream.
Wow, take a photo of that.
With orange cake.
Thank you very much.
Shall I grab another Coke for you, sir?
No, I'm good, thank you. I'm good, thank you.
So we summer pudding is this particular way it should look, and I have to say this one does look right. It's
incredible, isn't it? That looks
beautiful. I'm not sure whether you're meant to eat it or transplant it into somebody's chest. It's such a deep, deep red.
Such beautiful, isn't it?
It really is.
I don't want to eat it. I don't want to break it.
I'll just sit there and stare at it for a while. What was food like when you were a kid? What was your mum's cooking?
Wasn't very good, really. Lots of beans on toast. There was lots of West Indian food. There was lots of
St. Lucian dishes.
Yeah, St. Lucian, yeah. Fish cakes and rice and peas and chicken and curried goat. For my 18th, me and Mrs. Mitchell had to go down to Petticoat Lane, and so they slaughtered a goat and she cooked it for a curried goat for my 18th birthday party.
That sounds fabulous.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I had a lot of that. Lots of bagels.
Any particular filling for you?
Salt beef with mustard.
Fat on or fat off? That was always...
Fat on. I've never had some raspberry, I'll just have it.
I've always said it was the key question that you should be... If it's a good place doing salt beef, they've got to ask whether you want the fat on or fat off. Yeah.
Pie mash. Pie mash was always a
big... There were still a few of the old pie mash shops.
I think there's one left in Bethnal Green Road and one in Roman Road. So I used to, whenever on a Saturday, we'd go around my mum's and the family would phone me, and I'd have to get 15 pies, 15 mash and 3 large liquor. And I'd have a box and I'd have to carry it, you know. There's a funny thing about pie mash shops. You ever seen that there's a vegan Hare Krishna restaurant just off Oxford Street?
Yeah, I know exactly where you mean, just before you go into Soho Square.
And there's a thing of the progression of man from a young child to old man and then being reborn again.
Yeah, the image on the graphic on the wall.
And I always used to think that in a pie mash shop, it was like that with the ladies serving the pie mash, because there would always be a young girl and then a teenage girl, like 18, 19, who was in the blossom of her beauty, and then an older woman with a fag hanging out of her mouth doing the mash. And it was like that. You'd see over the years, you'd see that young girl of about 12 suddenly become the blossom of go back, and now she's the old woman
with a fag hanging out
of her mouth. And it was literally the same thing.
Did you ever do the eels? I don't want to get into stereotypes.
Yeah, definitely.
Jelly eels.
Jelly deals.
You actually had a taste for them?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because my old mum, again, another old East End Jew, she loved them, and I couldn't bear them.
But they're very similar to the oysters we just had. They're similar. They're very...
I don't know, but now I always thought it was a combination of the jelly and the bones thing.
Yeah, the bones. And also, we used to get them in a bucket, and you'd come around and some bloke would say, which one do you want? How do you know you got the eel? How do you know you got that one?
What, so it would still be a...
Yeah, still be alive in a bucket. Yeah. And you'd cut it up, and they cut it up.
Then were the days.
And there was... What was it? Tubby Isaacs used to be outside all the East End pubs.
Oh, was he the Welks?
Yeah, Tubby Isaacs. And Ray Winston told me a funny story. I worked with Ray Winston. He said, if you want some Viagra, Tubby Isaacs. Oh, thank you.
I kind of want to say to Ray, there are easier ways. There are easier
boots.
Now you can get a boot, so off prescription, and it's fine, and no one will judge you. But what the hell was Tubby Isaacs knocking? We don't know whether this is true. And we're
I
don't
know if it's true. He was joking. He was one.
Love the idea. I love the idea. So listen, as you finish off the last scraps of your beautiful summer pudding. Eddie Marsan, if I may, thank you for letting me take you out to lunch.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you very
much. Good.
Thank you.
Eddie Marsan really loves to talk, and I love talking to him. And Bentley's, I think, was the perfect setting for us. All those oysters. Do please subscribe to Out to Lunch, because it makes us feel better about ourselves. And make sure that you get every single edition as it drops. And as I've, taken you out to lunch, would you mind paying me back by dropping a nice review? 5 stars would do it. Makes me very, very happy. Out to Lunch is a Something Else and Jay Rayner production. The theme music was written, arranged and performed by Jay Rayner and Robert Rickenberg. The mix engineer was Josh Gibbs. The assistant producer was Jemima Rathbone. The producer is Selena Ream. And the executive producer is Darby Doris. Additional production is from Steve Ackerman. Next time, it's the actor, the director, the queen of the profanity. It's Kathy Burke.
You like your own company?
Yeah.
Spend 90% of your time, I think you said, by yourself?
Yeah, because I'm great. Wouldn't you want to be with me?
I would, absolutely.